Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to Arauco's fourth quarter 2021 results conference call. Today, we have with us Mr. Gianfranco Truffello, CFO of Arauco. We would like to inform you that this event is being recorded, and all participants will be in a listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are completed, there will be a Q&A session. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this call, please press star then zero to reach the operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that this presentation contains forward-looking statements that are based on beliefs, assumptions, and expectations of the management of the company based on currently available information. They involve risks and uncertainties because they relate to future events or expectations and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Arauco and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. For further discussion of these risks and uncertainties, investors should refer to quarterly and annual Arauco filings with the Chilean CMF and US SEC. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements due to new information or future developments. Now, I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Gianfranco Truffello, CFO of Arauco. Mr. Gianfranco, you may begin your conference.
Okay, thanks, and welcome everyone to this conference call for the fourth quarter of 2021. If we move to page four, we can see the highlights of the whole year. And we can see that this was a record year for Arauco. We got revenues of $6.35 billion. That is a 34% increase over 2020. Our net income was also a record of $1 billion, a very high increase compared to the $25 million that we got on 2020. Our EBITDA was almost $2.5 billion. That is 132% increase over last year. In terms of the progress of MAPA, as of January, we had a 93% advance. Our net debt to EBITDA went down to 1.83. That's a very big decrease from the 4.8 times that we have a year ago. And also the highlight of the shutdown of Line 1 that was done on January 3rd of 2022 after 50 years of operations. Now, if we move to page four again, we have the main figures for the quarter, and we can see comparing the fourth quarter to the third quarter that we had a slight increase of 2% of revenues to $1.74 billion. Our net income went down to 216, but as we're going to talk later on, it's because we had a very extraordinary third quarter because of one-time effects of forestry sales. The same affected adjusted EBITDA that came to $640 million compared to $923 million for last quarter. In terms of net debt, our net debt went up a little bit, 2.04%, but because of the last 12-month EBITDA increase, we were able to decrease the leverage from 2 times to 1.83 times. On page five, we can see that the cost of the increase in revenues was basically an increase in wood products of almost 5% or $46 million due to an increase of 8.4% in average prices that was offset by a 2% decrease in sales volume. The pulp revenues decreased slightly, 1%, mainly driven by a decrease in average prices for the quarter of 12.6% that was offset by an increase in sales volume. In terms of the distribution of sales, you can see that wood products represented almost 57% of the sales of Arauco in the quarter. We experienced an increase in cost of sales of 5.4% or almost $50 million, and that was basically explained by higher volumes sales of pulp and also some increase in unitary cost of chemical cost. We can see there that the cost of sales went up to $973 million. In terms of unitary sale cost, we have slight movements in terms of decreasing softwood bleach pulp unitary cost and a small increase in hardwood sales cost, unitary sales cost of 2.4% and decrease of 4.4% in bleach and a 1.3% increase in dissolving pulp. Page 6, administrative expenses increased 14% or 10.4%. The main explanation is increasing salaries and severance indemnities by 7 million. This is basically because of the accrual of the bonus, because of the better results and some effects of inflation in certain markets. Also, donations, contribution, and scholarship increased by 3 million or 200%, but from a very small amount in the last quarter. Distribution cost increased by 14 million, that is 8%. And it's explained by a higher volume and also some increases in freight costs on port services to almost $200 million for the quarter. In page 7, we see a negative other income for the quarter of $27 million compared to $285. This very big change is explained basically by the income that we got from the sale of forestry in the third quarter of 2021. And also a loss of $42 million in gains from changes in fair value of biological assets. That was an adjustment that we did in the future volumes of some properties, forest that we recalculate in the quarter that came up to be an effect of about $80 million negative compared to last quarter. In terms of other expenses, we have a 30% increase. This is explained by provisions for losses in forest fires, especially in Chile and Uruguay, of 12.3 million, which is normally done at least in Chile in the beginning of the forestry fire season. And Uruguay was exceptional, and it was a provision of about $4.5 million for losses of forest fires at the end of 2021. This is before any adjustments for insurance that we have in Uruguay. Page 8, we have a summary of the quarterly income statement. You can see there the net income of $216 million compared to the $511. We have already talked about the main lines of the income statement. The other lines are basically very, very similar one quarter to the other. We have a financial cost, a very small reduction of 5%, about $50 million. We have a decrease in participation in profit and loss in associates because of good results that we accrued from Sonae Arauco in the third quarter and an adjustment in provisions that we have in the fourth quarter. Exchange rate differences, very small, a negative $2.4 million for the whole quarter. Of course, income tax has a reduction because the income before tax was much smaller because of the things that were re-explained. Page 9, now talking about the EBITDA and the historical figures, you can see there a continuous increase in the EBITDA of each quarter. Of course, you can see there the effect of the forestry sales of $230 million. That was a one-time effect of the sales of the forest in Chile. And that's why the third quarter was so good at $923 million. So this fourth quarter was more normal, let's say, a little bit of reduction compared to the normalized third quarter, but still a trend of continuously improving the EBITDA quarter by quarter in 2021. In terms of breakdown, we had a very similar EBITDA of pulp and wood products, each of those about $350 million, and then minus the adjustment and other expenses that we do centrally. In terms of the evolution of the EBITDA from one quarter to the other, the reduction is in pulp, basically because we accrued all the income of the segment of forestry in pulp. Now we have only two segments, pulp and wood products, so all the results of forestry are accrued in the pulp division. That's why we see that huge decrease because of the exceptional EBITDA of the third quarter. In wood products, we saw a decrease of 5.5% due to basically increasing cost. Resins and other chemicals are impacting the cost in somehow in some regions, and that is producing a little bit of reduction in EBITDA. But as you're going to see later on, the EBITDA continues to be very good in the wood product division. Now, if we move to review of each segment, and we start with pulp in page 11, we can see the evolution of prices in, of the indexes first. And you can see there that the prices in Europe continue to be very good, steadily during the whole 2000, almost all 2021. We saw a reduction in the Chinese market, that you can see there in the lines below. And then an increase at the beginning of this year that we're going to talk later on the prospect. But all prices going up and the price in Europe continue to be very good. The spread now measured in the prices in China is about $160 between fibers. It used to be $172 per ton. In terms of shipments of global bleached chemical pulp, this is only showing 1 month compared to the year before, and you can see a reduction of 5.4% in tons to 4.5 million tons. In terms of inventory, you can see here the days of supply. Slight increase in as of to January in the days of supply and inventory in hardwood and softwood to 46 and 41 days of supply. Now reaching levels close to the middle of last year that we saw last year. Page 12, you can see on the left the reduction of 42% in the EBITDA of pulp. Again, explained by the one-time effect of the sales of forestry, but a very good increase compared to 1 year ago of 63% in the EBITDA of pulp. In terms of the evolution of price and volume, quarter over quarter, we saw an average price reduction of 12.6% that you can see in the graph on the right. Prices starting to go down at the beginning of the quarter and reaching low levels as up to December, especially in hardwood. But that was compensated by increasing volume of 13%, volume of sales, going to 981 tons of sales for the quarter compared to 868 tons. We compare year by year, the effect is basically better average prices of 38%. In terms of the market, we saw a stable pulp demand, with some increases in certain markets. In China, pulp demand stabilized, and there was no really expected reactivation in the fourth quarter. And of course, the inventories were affected by the complexity in the supply chain. And as we talked before, in Europe, the pulp demand remained stable and high levels, so that was able to pass the increases in prices to the end products of paper. So again, the evolution of prices, you can see there that we reached the peak of prices in April, May last year, and we saw a continuous reduction through the end of the year in most of the pulp grades. Now in page 13, going and talking a little bit about the outlook. Of course, things changed at the beginning of 2022, basically because of logistic difficulties and supply issues. And with a steady demand recuperating from all the COVID effects. And these logistical problems affected supply and, of course, helped to push prices up. And as we can see in the graph there, prices started on a lowest level, as for example, in hardwood on $565, and continued to go up. This is showing our net prices in China to $605, $655, and recently, the prices that we confirmed from China to $700 per ton. In softwood, the same effect is starting from $720 to $770, $840, and recently prices confirmed to $890, which are prices now very similar to the peak that we got on the middle of last year. Again, the explanations are shown there. Asian markets are picking up, and the operating rates seems to be increasing almost all paper grades. There's still some delays in delivering because of logistical problems. In Europe, continues to be very strong, apart from the logistical difficulties, and also because of the strike of UPM that has been going on for many months now, from January, that is affecting the supply of paper and also of pulps in the markets. And everyone knows that the effects of the conflict in Ukraine could prove to be complicated for the economy. We don't know exactly the effects now because it's very soon, but it's going to depend on each market about the supply and especially afterwards the economic activity, especially in Europe, where it's most affected by the increase in commodities, especially oil and gas. In terms of our program stoppage of maintenance, in fourth quarter we didn't have any. We already had the 16 days stoppage at Constitución in the first quarter, and we are going to start in the middle of March the annual stoppage for 14 days in Montes del Plata. Not really annual because we're doing almost every 16 months right now. The rest of the quarter, you can see there the program stopped for Nueva Altea, Valdivia, and Puerto Esperanza in the third quarter. Now moving on to wood products, in page 14. As we talked before, we saw a reduction of 5.5% in EBITDA from 338 to 320. Here you have the main explanation divided by panels and solid wood. We saw an increase in price in panels, 5.6%. That was we saw also a decrease in volume of 4.8%. In solid wood, we had increases in price and volume, so it was better in terms of compared to 1 year ago. Compared to one quarter. If we compare both products to 1 year ago, the big increases in prices with 31% in panels and 44% in solid wood. So as a summary of the fourth quarter, panel sales increased on a quarterly basis, increases in price. This was mainly as a result of some supply issues and logistical problems, some competitors. So we were able also to transfer some increases in raw material costs to final consumer prices. Resin prices have been increasing, especially in the US and Europe, and we have been able to pass along the prices because of this relative lack of supply in some markets. In solid wood, sales volume increases on prices, and we saw increasing demand, particularly in the Asian markets. Also, increasing volume in plywood, almost 10%. Again, because of some logistical difficulties of our competitors, that is helping us to increase our volume, but was partially offset by a decrease in price of 5.6%. Page 15, nothing really new here. Stable volume of sales and production in most of the market, and you can see there the increase in volume in plywood. In terms of the outlook, we have been seeing this graph of housing start for many quarters now. You can see a continuous increase, apart from the sharp decrease in during the worst part of the COVID in 2020. Now we are in 1.6 million houses a year. So it's a very healthy increase in the demand for housing. And that is helping the demand, especially in North America, where we sell almost 50% of our wood products. In terms of particle board and MDF, the North American market continues with a high demand of panel and furniture, and we expect the next month to continue to be strong. In remanufactured products, prices will continue to be strong during the next month, solid demand in housing and repair and remodeling. And again, certain competitors are affected by the lack of Russian timber as a raw material, especially in China, Vietnam, and other markets. Plywood, we expect the good news to remain in the next month, especially the appearance grade, which is the one that we produce most, and also the effect, again, of some Russian producers that are biggest competitors for us in plywood that are going to have problems in exporting to the developing markets. Page 17, now going to the other markets that we have in wood products in Central South America, where we sell about 40% of our sales. The situation in Brazil is a little bit weakened compared to the current levels. It's softening a little bit the market, basically because probably of the inflation in Brazil and the hike in interest rates of the central bank. In Argentina, things continue to be strong, and we expect that to be continuing during the following quarters. The same in Chile, demand remains strong. We have announced price increases for several panel products. Some uncertainty in the future regarding the real estate market because of the increase in interest rates of loans to buy houses that has been happening in Chile. That could have an impact in the construction and again, impact our sales of products. In some timber, a little bit weaker because some of our competitors haven't been able to export because of logistical issues, and that has pushed a little bit of volume into the local market. But again, very good results and prospects in the Chilean and Argentinian market. The rest of the markets are rather small, 10% more or less in Asia. Some signs of recovery after the Lunar New Year in February, but the logistical difficulties remain. And of course, the uncertainty about the Russian exports of lumber to China. Russia is a very big exporter of lumber and logs in the market, and we don't know what will happen. Of course, export will continue, we guess, to China because there's no ban on exports there, but things have to be seen to how they develop. And again, Europe is very small, less than 5%, and demand of plywood, which is the main product that we sell there, continues to be at good levels, of course, with all the uncertainty of the situation in Ukraine. Now we move to the free cash flow, page 18. We can see that we had a very stable number from cash from operations, 542. The difference comes in the following lines because we had a decrease in CapEx because of the expenses of MAPA, but it was compensated by the cash inflows of the sale that we accounted in the third quarter, but we started to and we received most of the receipts of cash in the fourth quarter, and that is the number of $320 million that we have in there helping our cash position. And also, during the quarter, we had the distribution of dividends that was $471 million that affected negatively the cash flow, of course, and that ended up in a free cash flow of negative 133 compared to a positive 171. That is the main explanation of the increase in net debt that you can see in the graph on the right side that helped end the net debt at $4.57 billion. Move to page 19. Our liquidity, our cash ended in $1 billion. And if we add the $375 million that we have in this revolving credit facility, we have a total liquidity of $1.4 billion more or less. So it's very strong cash position. Page 19, the evolution of net debt. You can see that we were able to decrease net debt starting from the first quarter of 2021. We had a slight increase in the fourth quarter, mainly because of the distribution of dividends. But our leverage has been going down from the peak in almost 6 times in the second quarter of 2020 to 1.8 times, which is, I guess, a record for many years for the company, basically because of the last 12 months EBITDA that increased 11.6% to, of course, the yearly EBITDA of $2.5 billion. In terms of gross debt, our gross debt reduced a little bit to $5.6 billion, but of course, the reduction in cash was the main reason for the increase in net debt. In page 20, our amortization schedule for the next 10 years and beyond, you can see there that for this year, we have $390 million to pay. And from that, the main obligations are bank loans, And from that, $298 million in bank loans. We have $248 in bank. And from that, basically, the main part is the amortization of the structured debt of Montes del Plata that is now coming to an end. And we have this year and probably one quarter else at the beginning of 2023 to have no debt in Montes del Plata. In terms of bond, we have only local bonds obligations, some interest to be paid of international bonds. The big amortization, the next big one that we have is in 2024. We have almost nothing to pay on 2023. Now moving to the, finally, to the material facts and news. The MAPA project update, of course, that we do every quarter. We reached 93% of advance at the end of January. We have already completed the electric connection to the national grid. And logs are already being delivered to the log yard in the mill. Of course, we have done a lot of PCR tests to apply to the workers of the project. And we have updated the startup date for MAPA now to the end of April of 2022. The one that we already mentioned before was the end of March. We are reaching the final of the project, but some adjustment to be made. And also we are now saying that the budget will be, the total spending will be around 2.8 billion. But most of that was is already spent, about $2.5 billion we spent as of the end of December 2021. The existing, of course, eucalyptus line was programmed to be stopped at the end of the year, and we did that on January 3rd. We stopped line one, which is an old line of 50 years of 300,000 tons of eucalyptus that was approved in the environmental impact study. We had to stop once we were already most ready to start line three. So that line is already stopped. In page 25, we can see some photographs of the project, and you can see there the log yard with the logs ready to start production, and some other photographs of the control center and the water treatment system. Other news in page 25, an update of the forestry fire season. As of March 4th, we have observed 8% less in the number of fires, so less number of fires compared to last year, but we had more impact of the in intensity of the fire, so we reached an affected hectares of 4,300 hectares compared to very low number in last season that was 339. So it was exceptionally good last season. These 4,000 hectares more average of a normal season. Of course, we are deploying a lot of capacity and efforts and doing every season, and that is a number that we can say about 20,000 airdrops of water, more than 3,000 flight hours of our airplanes and helicopters. And also, as we do every year, 30% of the fires we fight are of third parties, are not our properties, but we help to contain the fires in all the communities. The other news is that already told is the shutdown of Line 1. We had a ceremony to mark such occasion because it's a line that had 50 years of operation, was the first line of production of the company. So it was a big event for us to shut down that line that gave us so good things during those almost half a century. The other operation that we did, a rather small operation in Brazil, we bought the 20% that was of Stora Enso in a joint venture that we had. We own 80% of Forestal Arapoti, which is a company that has basically forest, 50,000 hectares of 28,000 was plantations in Paraná and supplies of operations and panels in Brazil. We bought the remaining 20% that they had in about $52 million. That was a small operation that we did exercising the option that we have to buy that 20%. So finally, as takeaways of the of this conference call, and before we go to the Q&A session, you can see that this was a record year for Arauco. We showed strong financial and operational results across all business segments, so very good results for the company. We obtained the lowest leverage ratio in nearly 11 years, and that helped us to have two outlook upgrades of Fitch and S&P, as well as a local rating upgrade of Fitch. And also that MAPA is nearing completion at the end of April. We hope that we can next conference call that is, as you can see there, for about mid-May, we can talk about the level of production of the mill and not about how it's going to start. So, of course, it depends a lot of things moving on, a lot of moving parts. We end up the construction. We are testing all the equipment and preparing for the final startup of the mill. So thank you for everything, and we're going to start accepting questions right now.
Thank you. The floor is now open for Q&A from analysts. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone at this time. If at any time your question is answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star then two. Questions will be taken in the order they are received. We do ask that when you pose your question, you pick up your handset to provide optimum sound quality. Please hold while we poll for questions. And the first question today will come from Thiago Lafiego with Bradesco BBI. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. I have two questions. The first one regarding pulp prices. We heard Canadians are increasing softwood pulp prices for in China for April business by $100 per ton. So basically reaching $1,000 per ton on softwood pulp. So are you going to also increase prices for April business there? And also if that materializes, the spread between softwood and hardwood basically will go up to like $300 per ton. So how do you see that spread evolving? Should we expect, you know, similar movements for hardwood pulp as well? And finally, how do you think paper makers will take such, you know, big price moves on pulp, specifically in China? And then my second question, I'm sorry, so many here, but just a second one. Do you guys have any color on chemical supply to Russian pulp mills? Do you think they might eventually have any issues with that, and that might lead to production halts over there? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Thiago. Well, we have seen prices increasing, and of course, momentum sometimes helps, but we haven't negotiated prices yet. We're going to probably, in a week or so, or 10 days, we're going to start negotiation of prices. So I don't have visibility of how our prices will move from April. Of course, if the other producers start raising prices, it will help to increase our prices also. So we see that demand is there. Of course, it's a lot of volatility because of the conflict in Ukraine. But we'll see in about 10 days, we will see how price negotiations goes for April for us. Yes, the spread will be depending on how hardwood prices increase also. So we need to wait a little bit. And of course, $300 is not a long-term price gap. So I would guess that we will have price increases in hardwood also if we see prices in softwood. How paper producers will take the price increases? Of course, it will depend on the amount of increase that we see in April. Some of the producers, of the tissue producers, are a little bit more complicated because they're not able to raise prices very good because it's a more competitive market. So they will be more affected probably. Paper producers will have some margin depending on how their demand is in the different markets. But I think that we need to wait a little bit. It's not only the pressure of pulp prices, it's also the pressure of some chemical, gas, natural gas, electricity, that is affecting paper producers. And your second question about chemical, it's very hard to have visibility, but we think that some of the producers have stock of chemicals. Some of them got have their chemicals coming from China. We have heard that Kemira is cutting down supplies to Russian producers, but we need to see what will happen depending on that. If they have lack of chemicals, probably they're going to start producing more unbleach than bleach pulp. But I think it's too early. We need to see if we see if we can experience some disruptions in the pulp sales. The Russian pulp sales are, I think it's about 2 million tons market pulp export. So it's not as big. Most of it goes to China anyway. It is softwood, basically. They have some 500,000 tons of sales of unbleached pulp. That could have some give us some space for us that we are a big unbleached producer to gain some markets sometimes. But I mean, it's too early. There's a lot of volatility. Things are changing every day. You probably have seen the movements in prices of oil, 15% up, down every day. The situation is very, very unstable at this moment to give an impression. But we think that they shouldn't have short-term problems of production, the Russian producers at this point, but we'll see.
Yeah, thank you, Gianfranco. If I may, a quick follow-up on the chemicals one. So if there is any issues with chemical supply to Russia, and that's more of a technical question, do you think this will be only impacting the bleaching side of the production, or do you think are there chemicals that would prevent them from producing at all?
I really don't know exactly that. I mean, it's a very hard question to assess right now because some of the chemicals comes from China. So basically, the only ban on sales that we have seen is the ban from Kemira at this point. So I don't know if they have to stop them. Most probably not, but you never know. There's very low visibility of what is going on over there. Of course, there's an impact of the sales of logs of China, so of Russia, especially to Finland. There's a lot of volume that go the supplies of birch logs that goes to Finland, about 4.4 million cubic meters of birch logs. That could affect the production of hardwood in Finland. At this point, UPM is shut down because of the strike, so it's not a big effect, but that could make some disruptions in the production of hardwood, so they could start producing more softwood. That could be a little bit good for us because we sell mostly hardwood in Europe. That is an effect of probably bigger than the other ones from Russia.
Very interesting. Thank you, Gianfranco.
Thank you. And the next question will come from Hernan Kisluk with MetLife. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you, Gianfranco, for taking my question and congratulations on the result. So I have a question on the wood products business. So during the call, you said that the outlook there still remains strong, but 2021 was an incredibly strong year for this business off chart. So I was wondering if we, for 2022, we should expect kind of a repetition of 2021, or maybe somewhere in between 2021 and let's say a normal year or an average year?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, 2021 was exceptional record. I mean, we didn't expect that recuperation from COVID and the demand that we saw from wood products for all the reasons we have been explaining for all these conference calls. We are seeing the momentum continuing, but it's very hard to predict what will happen in the, let's say, second half of the year. The difference between the wood products division and the pulp division is that the prices are not so volatile. So you can expect to have, let's say, one quarter ahead with the same, more or less, demand. But it's exceptional, and we are not expecting that to continue for the whole year. But we hope that will happen, but we have to see quarter by quarter if the demand continues to be strong, at least. What we have seen in North America and in Chile, Argentina, it continues to be strong. Brazil is showing a little bit signs of weakness, so that could be an early sign of something going on. But I think at least we're going to have a very good first half of the year. Second half is still a question mark. Let's hope that the momentum continues and that is more a structural change in the demand for wood that is happening. But you don't know.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Once again, if you do wish to pose a question, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. Please hold again while we poll for questions. And again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the question and answer session. At this time, I would like to turn the floor back to Mr. Gianfranco Trafello for any closing remarks.
Okay, thanks anyone all for attending this conference call. As I already told, in mid-May, we're going to have the results of the first quarter of 2022. And so in the meantime, we're all open to questions that you can follow up to our investor relations team. So thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
And thank you. The conference today has concluded. Thank you for attending. You may now disconnect your line at this time and have a nice day.